Hey guys, just want to take a few seconds to thank everyone that's been contributing to the podcast lately and to our community. You guys have been awesome. This episode is focusing on scenarios, what they are, when you should make them, are they important to Gwent meta, and then the type of scenarios you should be making. I would probably say this episode's more aimed at beginners to intermediate levels or people who are just having problems fitting scenarios into their decks. Here we highlight the normal podcasters, myself, Qcento, Ezra, and a new podcaster, Cat Dad Anthony, who I hope can join because I think he gave us a lot of really good information. So guys, make sure you hit the follow button, the sub button in your choice of podcast engine. We also have a YouTube channel as well that also helps a ton to get a little bit more exposure. And then, of course, our website. If you guys want to donate or help fund the channel, because, of course, as with any type of production, there is cost. We can gladly accept it. But if you're here just to listen, hey, by all means, go ahead. And here we go. This is our episode on scenarios.
I'm combing my beard with my hands. But guys, welcome to the podcast. This is Dark Temp, a.k.a. Joe. We are talking about scenarios today. What are scenarios? When do you play scenarios? All that good stuff. But we actually have a special guest today joining us, Cat Dan Anthony. He wants to go by Anthony, but Anthony, tell us about yourself.
Hey, everybody. I'm Anthony. I've been I'm beta player. Been in and out of pro for, about 4 or 5 seasons. Rank 1, kind of just maintaining that for a while, ever since homecoming, and have been enjoying the game ever since.
Cool. Yeah, so pretty simple stuff, but yeah, he's going to be joining us for this podcast, hopefully for a few more too. He's a part of our Discord channel, trying to contribute a little bit to Gwent, so if you guys want to become a part of that, there's information in our channels on how to do that. There's also an RSVP page on our website, thebarkeepsofredania.com, where you can talk about or join or try to join the podcast. So we are talking about scenarios, guys. So scenarios, what are they? What do they do?
Essentially, they're an artifact card. And they're very high provision, so generally speaking, someone will build an entire deck around the idea of playing a scenario. And the benefit of having them is that they really help sort of set up your play. You know, a lot of these scenarios involve spawning different special cards and spawning different unit cards that will sort of synergize with what you already are playing from deck. So it's a good way to get a lot of value in a short period of time and take control of a round or to make better use of a deck that otherwise wouldn't be too strong.
So scenarios, what are the main, when I'm thinking scenarios, I think of, Masquerade Ball, which is, the Nilfgaard scenario. I'm a big Nilfgaard player. I think of Haunt, but what do you guys think in terms of, if I'm a new player, I'm starting out, what scenario do you think is probably the most powerful scenario if you had to pick one?
Oh, man. I think right now people are getting a lot of value out of Geddi and Feign Death.
I'd say Pass the Floor, honestly. Before they nerfed it, well, they didn't nerf it, before they switched it around, it was giving you 2 engines, one in Peaches, and then also one in Seductress.
And I'm going to go a little different with my opinion here. I think the Siege is actually very underrated. So I just started trying to play Siege decks about a few weeks ago. And for a new player, this is great because a lot of the supporting cards for the Siege scenario for Northern Realms are actually bronze cards, like really easy to play bronze cards that pretty much everybody's going to have. Now, as you progress through the chapters of the scenario, so by playing, Siege engine cards, when you get to the ending, you have a huge cluster of damage that comes in. So it's a really fast and effective way to take control of the round, and you don't have to think too much about playing sequence. You can kind of just get things out there as you feel comfortable and not have to worry about, messing it up, so to speak. So Siege is actually really cool.
Yeah, I think scenarios too, we talk a lot about engines, right? So engines are cards that might be very basic bronze cards that you're like, oh, who gives a shit about that? But those are cards that, if not stopped, are the most powerful part of your deck. So Enjoyga Larva is a great one. It's a 1-power 2 armor monster with Thrive that actually deploys, or spawns, a second version. So yeah, one power card in the beginning can get very, very high, especially if they're running Thrive. If you're talking, you know, there's a lot of different engine cards. So scenarios most of the times will proc engine cards. So, for instance, we're talking Masquerade Ball, which is Nilfgaard, and the first thing it does is spawn a Thirsty Dame, which is anytime a card gets status, it goes up by one. So that could be a Veil, it could be Spy, it could be Poison, it could be Lock, and that can get really crazy over time. So, I mean, scenarios, do decks have to have scenarios?
Definitely not.
Yeah, they're very high cost in provisions. You know, with the recent patch, Masquerade was 14 provisions, and now it is at 15. So yeah, it's a lot harder for it to be fit into decks, especially with, you know, we only have so much provision cap space when you make a new deck, depending on the leader ability you get, giving you the bonus provisions. So, you know, 15 provisions, it may not sound like a lot, but that is a lot. That could be three cards, yeah, you know, three bronzes at fives. It could be, you know, a 10 and a five. Like, I mean, there's so many ways that a 15 provisions can really take up a lot for a single card. And then now with scenarios being doomed, and what the doom status is, once it leaves the battlefield, it does not come back throughout the game. It's gone forever. So, you know, you can only pretty much assume that if you play Masquerade, Passiflora, Siege, or any of the other scenarios, it's a one-round use. It's going to probably try to secure you the round, or it's going to make it to where you can pretty much either stay, you know, in the lead or keep you, you know, close to your opponent's score.
Yeah, and just to touch on that a bit more, when you're going to look at running a scenario, you have to sort of have an idea of what you're looking to do with that particular deck. So, for example, for Skellige, you have Gedenith, right? This is really good if you're looking to play maybe like a swarm deck or something that's going to be just boosting up a bunch of points throughout the board. But if you want to play more of a damage control type deck, you wouldn't really consider having this in there. You know, and Siege, for example, Siege is very damage heavy. So if you're looking to play something that is more of a boost deck, maybe you don't want to center your whole build around Siege, right? So it really comes down to the playstyle you've chosen, what you want to accomplish with your deck, and, you know, maybe what you're expecting to play against that season, because the challenges change from month to month. So what you're doing now might not be valid, let's say, next month. So you have to kind of look at the opponents too for that.
Yeah,
Sento's right. Like, you want to pick one thing your deck can do so it can do it well. You know, there's obviously exceptions, but you got to try and focus on the synergy and what plays well around all your cards.
Yeah, I think Ezra brought up a good point. You know, now that it's doom status, so you see a lot of cards that used to be able to play this scenario twice, very rarely three times, but that really changes how much value, you know, that you can get out of a scenario. But at the same time, you have a card like Bomb Heaver, which when deployed destroys a target artifact. That has been changed to, I think, doing damage or something like that, right?
So it doesn't. Yeah, so it does one damage when deployed. And then if you do happen to have bombs in your hand, it does three damage instead.
Yeah, so the only way to really deal with a scenario is Karathi Heatwave, which can be incredibly important, you know, if the other deck is playing tall. So it's kind of like a win-lose, I think. Not a win-lose, but both sides of the coin, right? Like, it's a good card. It's cost a lot. Could only be played once and can only really be dealt with one card. So
100%. And what I've noticed this season in Pro is that, you know, there's maybe about, I want to say, approximately 60% of people are running non-devotion decks. And then there's about maybe 40%. We could argue that, you know, all day.
Yeah.
But it just seems like a lot of people are running non-devotion because they're preparing for these artifact scenarios. So a lot of people have Karathi in decks. So if you're to play one, there's a good chance, you know, 50-50 almost, that you're going to have it destroyed upon when you play it. So you might want to run a defender if you're looking at running an artifact, and then that kind of eats up additional costs. So definitely lots of things to factor when you're playing these units or these
cards. I will say that I have seen a lot of more occurrences of Shook's Day Off being played over Karathi, just because it gives them a unit and the ability to destroy an artifact.
That's a good point.
You know, what does he come out at as a 6 or an 8?
They changed it, so he doesn't come out as an 8 artifact destroy, does he? He comes out as a 4?
I think so.
Let me check. Yeah, but Karathi is good for the tall removal too, so it's, again, I've been seeing lots of it, so I would just expect to see it, you know, probably once or twice if you're running a scenario.
I think scenarios, let's say, like, Haunt can be played super late in a round, right? Because it doesn't rely so much on an engine as it relies on just getting as much out as possible. So let's say you're playing something like Glutzy Warp, which, you know, destroys everything on the board. It's a 1, and it gets a +2 for each one. But when you're talking about something like a Masquerade Ball, which relies on Thirsty Dames getting those engine procs, I think, you know, it can be... It's all about kind of getting out the Karathi Heatwave, right? So does he have a Karathi Heatwave? And that's just your ability as a player to see what he's playing. Can you kind of play a card to get rid of the Karathi and then play your scenario? So it can get interesting, you know, because Masquerade Ball also is going to give you those fangs, right? Which is going to give you those poison counters, which if a unit gets 2 poison counters, it's removed from removed from play, so destroyed essentially. But can be really difficult with the introduction of Veil, right? So Veil doesn't allow you to put status on a card. So, yeah.
Yeah, yesterday while I was playing, Lewis brought up a pretty good point that it's almost better to let the scenario just do its thing rather than just wasting a Karathi on it. And then you don't have anything else for unit removal that's going to, you know, kill their bigger engines later on.
It could be, I think it matters kind of what round you're in too, right? So, like, if I'm coming out swinging round 1 with my scenario, then it's a good point. Yeah, just let them take round 1, you know, bleed them enough or play enough cards that you can possibly get just a pass on round 2. And then round 3, you know, at least you don't have a scenario to deal with and you can save your Karathi for a tall card if you're playing like a deck like Monsters. They usually play super tall, or Skellige that might be playing like a Morkbog or something like that that gets super tall. Or not Morkbog, but you know what I mean. Like, yeah, so that's a good point, though, for sure.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, that's the thing I like about Deadeye is that even if it's Fang Death scenario just gets taken out by Karathi, you could still put out as many tokens, if not more, than what the scenario gives you. You get, I believe, a 3 or 4 point engine right off the start with Commando. And then, 3. And then you get 2 tokens, and then you get Waylay. So basically, it's giving you 12.
Yeah.
If we want to proc it all in one, but we really couldn't. I mean, that's not including Overtime with Commando, because she is technically the engine. She's going to get +1 at the end of every turn as long as you control health units.
Yeah, I think talking about defenders too, I think defenders even become more important with it too. I know when I was playing a lot of scenario, if you don't have a defender like a Cave Troll, it can be really difficult to get a scenario out. And if you have a deck like Nilfgaard that relied a lot on Masquerade Ball and you get that removed quickly, it's like, okay, well, what the hell am I going to do now? The defender essentially means it can be put on the melee or the back row. You're going to want to place it on the row that you're going to have your most valuable cards to set up or your current most valuable cards. And that essentially means that nobody can target anything on that row besides the defender. And that could be dealt with a card like any card that has Purify, like a Peller, which would remove that status, you know, so that it would be able to be. You can deal with something else on the row. So defenders, you ever see a defender come out, just know that the opponent is setting up his play, you know, his combo essentially.
Yeah, and exactly. to touch on that, there's a couple factions where I'll risk it all without one. If I'm playing like a Deadeye deck and I'm using Feign Death, I won't always run a defender. More than likely, I won't at all. Siege is actually one that I would. I'd probably run it with Masquerade Ball, but I probably wouldn't run it with Haunt as much because, again, you could play it late round and chances are they already have spent, you know what I mean, their Karathi or the removal on something else like a tall unit. So a couple I'd keep it in for. Again, it would probably be Geti, Feign Death, or sorry, Geti and Masquerade, most likely.
Yeah, especially with Masquerade, because if Masquerade gets Karathied, you're losing a lot of value. Because yeah. Most of that, like, if your engine's out and you're not applying status, I mean, Thirsty Dame's going to probably get removed really quickly, especially if she's only out at, like, 5 or 6.
Yeah, so I think a lot of the talking about removals, right? So it's knowing what removal, not removal cards, but what damage cards are out there. So, like, for Northern Realms, you have Boiling Oil, which is going to do 5 damage to a target, and if the target's Death Blowed, it purifies both cards on or cards on each side, right? So you need to be able, when you're playing cards, to understand, okay, what could he place on the board, or what could he play that could deal with this card? So Stunning Blow, Boiling Oil, Nature Selection, Parasite are all cards that do direct damage to a card. So again, that just comes into play of knowing, how do I protect this card from being removed, right? Because it's a lot about dealing with your opponent's engines more than anything.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not really going to say that we could sit here and try to determine the math, but if you guys had to just guess, what scenario would give you the most points?
I would it's tough, right? So if you're playing, it matters what mechanic you're playing. I think if you're playing Haunt, you do it correctly with Glutzy Warp, you're going to be getting a whole bunch of points. I would probably say if you're playing a lot of Siege engines, I would probably say Siege.
Siege with mobilization would actually be a big, big, big points. And, you know, what do you guys think about, like, let's say as a player, for example, like, how would you know when someone might be running an artifact? You know what I mean? We should probably prep them for, like, when do you think it might be coming kind of thing?
Well, I think if talking about Nilfgaard, right, because I play that majority, I would say if you see a lot of Aristocrats, for sure, because Masquerade Ball is essentially only procs if there's Aristocrats. And then look for, you know, what cards are they playing bronze-wise? Are they playing super small in the beginning? They're not setting you up for, like, a large card. I think if you would see, like, Letho or something like that, they're probably not. But it's tough to say. I mean, if you see a lot, if you see Fangs, if you see Van Morlahem Hunters, or they're probably not playing Van Morlahem before that. But I would think,
if they're playing Cupbearer or So some other neutrals, if they're playing King Cobra or Morale, because those are poisons that are just going to work with Thirsty Dame and Ball as well.
That's a good point. So any card that's going to give status, right, is definitely going to be, okay, there's a Masquerade Ball coming in. And Cupbearer, that was a big... Cupbearer and Morale were huge in Masquerade Ball decks in the beginning, mainly because Morale is a card when brought out, does poison, and then the next turn it has one order for poison. So it's pretty much a guaranteed removal if they don't lock it or remove it. But with the new patch, two patches ago, I want to say, Morale has to be played on the melee row to get the ability to do the deploy, right? Or is it the order?
It's the order, yeah.
So he still does the one poison, but if he has to be put on the melee row to get the order. So that's a good point for sure.
Yeah, like, see, I mean, you really can't determine when a scenario is coming in, because a lot of Nilfgaard players, if they know that they're going to be, you know, down in points or up in points, they'll most likely save Masquerade Ball for maybe their last 3 cards played, because they can place the Masquerade and then they just have 2 Aristocrats to proc it, you know, secure rounds. So it's like, yeah. I mean, you have to kind of just deal with it as it comes out. Like, there's no way of guessing when it's gonna pop out.
I don't think that's the right time to play Masquerade Ball. I mean, because you're just losing, in my opinion, all the status procs off of Thirsty Dame. And you can even play a second Thirsty Dame to proc the Fangs, you know, to get the poison. Then you have 2 cards at a gain status. So, I mean, yeah, I think it really just comes down to how the opponent's playing. It's all about reaction.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some dead giveaways. Like, if they're playing Deadeye Ambush, like, leader ability, you know they have a Feign Death. Like, that's a given.
It's true.
When you see a hidden cash deck, you kind of have an idea that there's probably going to be a Passiflora.
Mm-hmm.
Overwhelming Hunger for monsters. I mean, it's a good indication that there might be a Haunt. But it's not always true, right?
Yeah. I think the only deck where I know for sure... like we were saying with Masquerade Ball, I think in a similar way, Siege. I don't think I see any other NR decks that play like Trebuchet or Carabalista that aren't running Siege.
That's a good point. Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen.
Because why would you?
Yesterday, what caught me off guard was the guy was running Shield Wall, and I don't know how he fit all this. He must have taken out Baron and who's the other guy? Or Elephant.
Okay.
Because he was running two duels, so he had Antis and Selkirk, and he had Siege and Varaxis, and he had Adalia. So I was like, Jesus, how could this guy fit all this in his deck?
Yeah.
And then he had all his bronzes as well. So I'm assuming, he had to have taken out Baron and War Elephant in order to fit that in.
I think Northern Realms just has so many things to deal with. I think that's just the crazy thing, you know, and Duel is one of their big ones. So Duel is essentially you target a specific card, you do the damage equal to your card's power, and then that card does damage back to you to what its current power is, and that just keeps going back and forth until something's dead. So Selkirk, which is a 5, correct? Let's say it goes against a 6, it does 5, so now that 6 is a 1, so that does 1 to Selkirk, brings down to a 4, and then Selkirk will destroy it. So when played with Shield Wall, which essentially puts a shield on Northern Realms card, that pretty much would negate any damage that comes back at it for the first hit. So you can only imagine, how good that could be. And then, you know, Haunt, what are some combos you see a lot with Haunt when using that scenario?
Deadlock, for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say Deadlock because would be...
it gets tricky. When you put down the Haunt, the second you play your first Deathwish card, it automatically spawns the Bargist, which needs to consume something on deploy. So you don't want to be putting down like a Noon Wraith or anything that's going to help them. And Detlaf's a really good way just to get the points out of it real quick. And then you could prepare your removal cards like Imperial Manticore or Maruna, right? Around the following consume. Generally speaking, that's what I do.
Yeah, so is it... you know, there's some cards that you actually can consume. So like you said, is it Noon Wraith, right? The one that could possibly help them. But I've learned a couple weeks ago.
I learned with Goliath.
Let's see actually consumes every 1 point card. So it might help them in the beginning. And I've actually seen people use it to Rolock certain people. So if you're playing like Northern Realms, that might be playing a Frigate that's spawning, you know, a 2 point card every turn, you could throw some 1 point cards on their rows to Rolock them. So unless they have a way to deal with the cards. So, I mean, like we keep repeating over and over again, it's how your opponent plays, how do you react and things like that. But, you know, Death Wish is going to be the card that triggers it. So, yeah.
So some others I've seen, Foglet, obviously, that gives you a little thing into Werecat, very valuable. Manticore, Catacan is a little bit less used, but I've seen that before.
What does Catacan do?
Catacan on deploy spawns that 2-power doomed vampire, and when it's consumed, it does it again. It repeats the deploy ability.
Yeah, and that's also a Thrive card, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Thrive, every single turn, every card you play over, that card will boost it by 1, and monsters are known for playing super tall, especially if you're playing like a big dummy deck, like Ace of Plays has kind of showed off, which I love that deck because it's just straight nonsense, but a lot of things you can do with it.
I think also Maruna would be an ideal first target because you want her to be, you know, her Death Wish ability to proc right away. I've always seen people play the Haunt and then Maruna comes down first.
Yeah.
Or it comes down to, what's the other one?
Yeah, it's circumstantial though, right?
Yeah. the Night Wraith. Like, the Night Wraith, we know, plays for 5 points right off the bat.
And Maruna, when dropped, Death Wish ability, it'd have to be killed, right? That is to seize a unit with 4 or less power, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can use that card to deal with a lot of bronze engines, like, super quick. Because, again, it's not allowing the opponent to get his cards out of control. It's about setting the tone and keeping board control throughout. I mean, you fall too far behind, it's harder to pick up. But, you know, if you're playing monsters, you can have some pretty, pretty high point swings just because they play so tall. But at the same time, you don't want to get yourself caught going too far backwards. Especially if you're thinking about, you know, forcing a pass or trying to win round one, which usually is incredibly important in most decks, right? Because round one, if you win and you're going to pass in round two, will give you a final say, which is, like, a big thing.
For sure. And we should probably clarify that every single scenario has a certain archetype of card that has to be played to proc it, right? We did touch briefly on the Haunt being Death Wish and how Masquerade Ball needs its aristocrats, but we also have, of course, Siege for the Siege engines. With Geti, we're using Druids in this case. Yeah. For Feign Death, we're using Elves. And for Passiflora, we're using Blind Eye. So you have to make sure when you're building a deck, you have these certain types in your deck. And I try to have somewhere between, you know, 4 and 6, just so that you're guaranteed to pull, right? Otherwise, you don't really get much value out of your scenario whatsoever.
I think you bring up a really good point with that, which we didn't focus on early, is that you know, when you're building your deck, you have to synergize it around a point, right? And if your scenario card is your most expensive card, most likely is, that's got to be the card that you centralize your deck around. So you're gonna have to put Death Wish cards and all those other cards. You're gonna have to put enough of them to that you're not constantly not drawing your cards to play your scenario. So that's a really good point for sure.
Just imagine, like, no procs, just the scenario.
That has happened. I have drawn Masquerade Ball and drawn, crazy enough, no aristocrats. I'm like, well, this is fantastic.
We just don't want people making a deck without them at all, right? That would suck.
That would suck.
Yeah, yeah. Always got to hang on to 2 or 3 in hand.
Yeah, so
hey, that's like point, that. Right? That's like me, you know, when the whole craze of Siri Nova came out, I was like, oh, okay, I could put Siri Nova in my deck. Oh. And then I was putting over 10 provision cards, and I'm like, well, it says 10 provision or higher, so I was like, I thought maybe that didn't count.
why is it not staying on the board?
Yeah, like, why is it not activating like how it does for everybody else? And I'm like, oh, duh. It says 10 or less.
Siri doesn't like you.
It's awesome how powerful the Siri cards, or how much attention the Siri cards have been getting. I think that's for another episode, but I think that's pretty sweet. But so about scenarios, you guys have anything else you really want to talk about with them?
Man, the most infamous before this patch, Masquerade Ball. I'm so happy the doomed status came around. I think it was a very good change.
I'm kind of on the fence about it being a huge Nilfgaard player. I think it kind of destroyed the faction. I think it was probably a good idea, right? Because I could bet how annoying it could be going against a Masquerade Ball that played Anaheed, which would go twice. There was even some decks that did it 3 times. But I don't think Nilfgaard got the answer it needed to offset that, in my opinion. They because the whole joke with Nilfgaard was they're a one-trick pony. Like, they play Masquerade Ball, and that's kind of it, which isn't true, of course, but it's a good point, right?
Yeah.
At one point in time, everyone was playing Masquerade Ball.
Just you wait, though. I'm telling you, we all know it's coming. A big update for Nilfgaard, probably, in the next expansion.
I hope so.
What I got to say for people is, if you don't play scenarios, try and play scenarios. And if you do play scenarios, then maybe try to play without one and see the contrast, right? Yeah. It's a totally different style of play, and you want to keep the game interesting for yourself, right? I find a lot of people look at them as these big, intimidating things, but they're not actually too hard to, you know, work around, right? Once you get the hang of a few games, it's really easy to roll out a scenario. But again, don't make it your whole play, because if they shut it down, you need to have supporting plays in order to actually come back and win. So, you know, center your deck building around it, but have an alternative strategy in mind. Like, for example, monsters, my alternative strategy would be the big Thrive stuff, right? Having a lot of Thrive cards to, you know, let's say they get rid of my Haunt, right? I don't want to have it all sitting there. And I find that Nilfgaard's starting to adjust with more assimilate stuff to make up for the ball, right? So again, try a couple strategies if you're running the scenario, just in case.
I think you're going to have a huge advantage if you're new to the game as well and you're starting off in the lower ranks and you are playing scenario cards when people aren't. I mean, that's a huge advantage. What else? Anything?
That's all we got to say.
One last thing we could touch on is if they're going to play scenarios against you, don't be quick to push the Karathi out if you have it in hand. Just let them see what they're trying to do. You know, like if you know that they're going to play, you know, other cards, save your Karathi for that. Like we were talking about earlier, just because you see the scenario pop out doesn't mean you're going to lose the round. You could still very much still win the round if the scenario comes down.
That is a good point, because Let's say, for example, you're playing against Passiflora, right? If they spawn the Passiflora Peach and you have a 5-point damage card, it's done, right? And then, you know, at the ending of the scenario, when they spawn the Sly Seductress, if you have a 5-point damage card, it's done. So the scenario only plays for 6 coins. Maybe you don't want to use your biggest kill card to take that down, because maybe they have a bigger target like Saul, who's worth like 20 points at the end of the game. So you have to obviously use your discretion, see how things are playing out, and see if you have enough stuff in hand to sort of balance and respond to, you know, the scenario as it deploys, right?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Because you could play around Siege as well. Just don't play in ranged at first.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, so I think that pretty much wraps it up. We're continuing to try to get some more content on the website to kind of go along with what we're talking about for you guys to kind of learn the decks. You also have all the streamers here, Kusento, Ezra, they're always streaming. You can check out their channels. They're great people to watch to kind of learn what they play. They play different factions too, so that would be good. Both, you know, pro players as well, so they'll give you that ability to see, you know, what it's like. Because the game climbing the ladder is a lot different from the game you're going to experience in pro. People play much different decks, in my opinion. So you have that as well. But yeah, guys, our next podcast is scheduled to be Tuesday. We always do try to live stream it. What are we talking about? Are we doing another intro channel? Do we remember? Intro episode? We haven't even decided. Look at that.
We have Squirtle to do, and then we still have our beloved NG.
And that's exciting. I have a lot to say about Scoia'tael, so.
Yeah, so I think we'll probably focus on intro to Scoia'tael. And like I said, this is going to be on the YouTube channel as well. So if you guys like the content, hit the sub button, talk about it with your friends. But guys, thank you so much for listening. I hope you guys all have a wonderful, wonderful day, and go play some Gwent. Peace.